Hello and welcome to Essential Dissent, coming to you from the last days of the U.S. Empire. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode is Plenary 2, entitled Palestine, Zionism, and Imperialism, from the 2024 UNAC Conference, held April 5th through the 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota. UNAC is the United National Anti-War Coalition. UNAC fights against wars at home and abroad. Their goal is to bring together organizations and movements representing people in struggle today and unify in collective action against the major perpetrator of war and injustice in the world, the United States government, along with its allies and proxies.
I'm personally very excited for this panel, so I hope you all are too. My name is Rania Salem, and I am with the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, the Chicago chapter. I am just the MC today, so I will be introducing the loveliest panelists that we have this morning. So we have Tahar Hirzallah, who is the director of organizing at American Muslims for Palestine and a graduate student at the University of Minnesota, where he studies U.S.-born Muslim resistance to Zionism. And then we have, yes, claps. And then we have Janine Solanki, who is a Vancouver, Canadian-based anti-war and social justice organizer and the chair of Mobilization Against War and Occupation, also known as MAWU. And then, of course, we have Hassan Marajda, who is a community organizer and is actually the co-chair of the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, the Chicago chapter, and of course, as my comrade, I have to say he's one of the best. So let's give a claps for our panelists here today.
Good morning. We're here to speak about Zionism and U.S. imperialism. So go ahead and start. So siblings, we know what Israel is. It is one large U.S. Army base. And before that, it was one large British army base. The role of Israel is to maintain U.S. and Western hegemony over the Arab world and the Middle East. And it was placed there and established as an illegitimate state in 1948 for that reason specifically. It is there to ensure that any resistance and any dissent against U.S. imperialism and reactionary Arab regimes is neutralized. Israeli policy must not be viewed as separate from U.S. policy. It belongs 100% to the U.S. The weapons and resources are sold or granted by the United States, and it is informed about the majority of, if not all, military and political decisions. The U.S. supports this genocide that is happening right now unequivocally. The level of violation of international law, of brazen disregard for international diplomacy that we see from Israel and the United States right now is unprecedented. The United States has made it clear that it does not care about international law and that it will veto or not force Israel to abide by United Nations Security Council resolutions. That will not allow anything or anyone to threaten the existence of Israel, its watchdog in the Arab world. I don't think anyone in this room could have ever thought that a genocide that has already killed close to 35,000 Palestinians would be live streamed into our homes and that the United States would justify it. But that's what's happening. And the United States is showing the world how far it's willing to go and how much it's willing to do. And it is capable of doing more. And it is clear to all those who understand Netanyahu, the Israeli government and the Israeli society, that Israel's recent escalation against an Iranian diplomatic target in Syria and against Hezbollah and Iraqi targets is its way of trying to pull the United States even further into its quagmire. I do not believe it will happen, but Netanyahu only cares about his political survival at this point and will kill another 100,000 Palestinians and Arabs if he knew it would do the trick. In addition, the United States bully is also coming for those who are resisting, whether in Palestine or the United States or South Africa or all around the world. Our Palestinian-led mass movement is doing some incredible things in our streets, and law enforcement and Zionists are using all the tactics of repression in their arsenals, especially against students and community-based organizers and organizations. The brave people and government of South Africa stood up and brought a case against Israel to the International Court of Justice. And just 2 weeks ago, U.S. Palestinian Community Network, my organization, and the National Alliance Against Racism, Political Repression, one of the most important black liberation organizations in the entire United States, met with the brilliant South African Foreign Minister, Dr. Naledi Pandor. She told us there is a bipartisan bill in D.C. threatening sanctions, with one co-sponsor saying, "It is clear to me that the ANC of today is no longer the party of Nelson Mandela, and I am greatly concerned with South Africa's alignment with China and Russia and embracement of Hamas in the wake of the devastating October 7th attacks." And another bill saying, "South African officials have made a miscalculation by aligning themselves with Russia and China. It is in our national security interest for the United States to review our relationships with nations that may not share our values and align themselves with such actors." Shame. So this is pretty clear that the United States is in the process of preparing sanctions against South Africa for their brave stance with the Palestinian people. This is a message to all the world. But while the United States and Israel dig in, we're also witnessing a rise in the level, will, and ability of the resistance access in the Arab world. I don't need to tell all of you, but regardless of what we hear from CNN and BBC and MSNBC and other corporate media every day, this isn't Israel versus Hamas. The Palestinian resistance represents all of the political movements, ideological trends, and social sectors of Palestinian society. Yes, Hamas has the strongest military of them all in Gaza, but the Marxist-Leninist forces and the other Muslim forces, the Social Democratic forces, the Nationalist forces, and even the Fatah-led forces are all fighting to defend the Palestinian people from ethnic cleansing and genocide, and are fighting under a unified military command. And if you want to know more about what they're doing, you could always read Al-Mayadeen English on the web and then tune in to Electronic Intifada's podcast that has been providing not only great news, but great military analysis of the resistance in English. In addition, of course, we see that the incredible resistance in Yemen, Lebanon, Iraq, and Iran's refusal to back down from the United States threats, all playing critical roles in making sure that the Palestinian resistance has the support it needs, ensuring that Israel's military cannot focus exclusively on Gaza, keeping the United States and other imperialist countries on their toes. Keeping the United States and other imperialist countries on their toes in the region and leveling the playing field a tiny bit. Even the narrative in this country is starting to shift. Although slowly, but because of the pressure that we in the United States Palestine Support Movement are putting on the complicit Democrats and the fear that they may lose voters and develop an even wider rift with their base. It is also because we have been shutting it down. Disrupting Genocide Joe and his cronies everywhere they gather, starting with a sit-in that a sit-in that my organization, United States Palestinian Community Network, organized in Chicago in Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky's office, less than 2 weeks after October 7th, which was one of the first arrests of those resisting the genocide, occurred. Schakowsky and Polkin and others just recently calling for a suspension of weapons sales, and Biden claiming on Thursday that he's demanding a ceasefire are a result of organizing pressure, but it's too little, too late. The United States and Biden are trying to save face and blame Netanyahu as a bad actor, instead of Zionism and racism and settler colonialism and white supremacy and U.S. imperialism, but they won't recover. The Democratic Party won't recover, and United States imperialism won't recover. The Palestinian resistance and our fight for national liberation are hastening U.S. imperialism's decline, which we have been witnessing now for years. The United States is fighting a losing NATO war in Ukraine. It is spending a ton of money and political and diplomatic capital in Israel. It is losing its grip on Latin America, on Africa. China is becoming more dominant, not just in Asia, but expanding its influence with the Belt and Road Initiative in Africa and beyond as well. Internally, here in the United States, we are dealing with massive economic and political crisis as well. Important sectors in the Black liberation, Chicano liberation, indigenous liberation, immigrant rights, and other national liberation and oppressed nationality movements are rising up against a system of injustice, racism, white supremacy, and capitalism that are inherent to the United States. These are all signs of a declining U.S. imperialism, and Palestine and Palestinians are at the forefront, inspiring the whole world with our sacrifices, our steadfastness, and our resistance. Of course, we mourn our martyrs every day and know how brutally difficult it is to read the news and study the stats and watch the videos. But I just want to remind everybody, Algeria lost more than 1 million beautiful souls in its battle for its independence. Vietnam lost more than 3 million beautiful souls to kick the French and U.S. imperialists out of their nation. And we in Palestine will do the same. Palestine is the anti-war and anti-intervention question of our time. A free Palestine and the return of all refugees and their descendants not only frees Palestinians from the shackles of Zionism, racism, and national oppression, but will also cut off a huge tentacle of U.S. imperialism in the world, aiding, abetting, and inspiring millions more to rise up and do just the same in the whole globe. And as USPCN constantly says and writes in all of our releases and statements, eventually the whole world acknowledged that South Africa had no right to exist as a racist, apartheid, white supremacist, settler colonial state. And eventually the whole world will come to the realization that Israel has no right to exist as a racist, apartheid, white supremacist, settler colonialist, Zionist state. So, this is the time to revive and reignite the anti-war movement. It has to become what it was during Vietnam in the 60s. And it has to continue to grow. Because we know what the U.S. wants. And they're going after China next. So this is the time to revive the anti-war movement in this country. It has to be the biggest in the history. And so make no mistakes, with our support in the United States and the support of hundreds of millions of other working and oppressed people across the world, Palestine is currently winning and will ultimately win with its full and total liberation on every inch of our land. And like we say in Arabic, min al-mayya lal-mayya. Palestine Arabia, from the water to the water, Palestine is Arab land. From the river to the sea, from the river to the sea, all power to the people. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I am so inspired to be in this room with you all today, with my fellow panelists, and to connect and learn and talk about how we can build a united struggle against imperialist wars, occupations, sanctions, and our most critical fight today for ceasefire in Gaza and for the self-determination of Palestine. After all, here we are today in the belly of the beast, where the decisive battles will occur. My name is Janine Solanki. I'm based in Vancouver, Canada, the chair of Mobilization Against War and Occupation, which has been organizing against imperialist wars and occupations for 20 years, always with a demand of freedom and self-determination for Palestine and all oppressed nations as an ongoing campaign of our organization. As I'm here representing Canada, or from an anti-war group in Canada, I want to take a moment to clarify a misleading headline regarding a recent motion in Canadian Parliament. You may have heard that Canada is stopping arms shipments to Israel, and unfortunately, this is not true. Unfortunately, Canada is continuing to ship arms to Israel, and I should note that Canada is a major arms manufacturer and dealer to the United States, to Saudi Arabia, to Israel, to many other countries, with over $28.5 million in military goods sent from Canada to Israel just between October and November last year, and $70 million of weapons exports approved between October 7th last year and January 8th, 2024. Among the other problematic language in the motion, which reaffirmed Canada's support actually for Israel and condemnation of Hamas, regarding arms shipments specifically, the motion was to, and I quote, cease the further authorization and transfer of arms exports to Israel to ensure compliance with Canada's arms export regimen and to increase efforts to stop the illegal trade of arms, including to Hamas, end quote. This does not stop the export of arms that have already gotten export permits, which is potentially years worth of further arms exports, and does not also restrict so-called non-lethal exports, which includes component parts that go into deadly drones, fighter jets, and other weapons that Israel uses against our Palestinian sisters and brothers in Gaza. So, as you see in Canada, we still have a big fight ahead of us against the government of Canada participating in the genocide against Palestinians, alongside the struggle against U.S. imperialism, which is funding, arming, and giving political support to the Zionist apartheid regime of Israel. So that note aside, today we're engaged in the most critical struggle for liberation and self-determination of Palestine in the last 75 years. For 6 months, we've witnessed the unstoppable brutality of genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, against the Palestinian people in Gaza. And for 6 months, we, all of us in this room and beyond, have been part of a consistent and militant worldwide movement that has brought tens of millions of people onto the street, some who've been in solidarity with Palestine for decades, and some who've learned about Palestine in just the last few months but have been compelled to stand on the side of humanity and the side of Palestine. Mass consciousness in favor of humanity has been growing and growing. Observing the fascist acts of genocide of Palestinians by Israel has shocked people worldwide and has moved the hearts and the minds of hundreds of millions of people in the world in favor of humanity and Palestinian rights. Slogans and demands have rung through the streets and through our consciousness. Ceasefire now, end the genocide, shut it down. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. U.S., stop arming and financing Israel. Reinstate UNRWA funding. Israel out of Gaza, end the siege. Free all Palestinian political prisoners. No justice, no peace. Biden and Netanyahu, we charge you with genocide. Palestine will be free. U.S., Canada, EU, you are complicit with genocide. Stop bombing Gaza and Rafah. And free, free Palestine! All of these slogans, all of these words that have become a second nature for us to continue chanting day after day, this establishes that we are in the midst of an unfolding anti-war and pro-Palestine movement that has the potential to go beyond the Vietnam anti-war movement that many here, I know, were also part of. Palestinians are not fighting for their self-determination only. Their struggle for freedom and liberation has been radicalizing millions upon millions of people worldwide, thousands of miles away from Palestine and Gaza. The class struggle in Palestine and Israel has pushed hundreds of millions of working people and oppressed people to the center of politics. We are clearly witnessing that the worldwide mass movement to support the Palestinian struggle and Palestinian rights is moving to a higher stage of a powerful anti-imperialist movement. Hundreds of millions of people have not only questioned and scrutinized the fascist and genocidal acts of Israel, but also of the United States, of Canada, and Europe too. Due to this, I'd like to borrow a methodology from the Communist Manifesto and apply it to today. A specter is haunting the capitalist and imperialist world, the specter of an anti-imperialist movement. It's important that as we're at the stage of needing to reinforce and strengthen our movement to ensure that it keeps gaining momentum and has the leadership and vision to continue as a long-term struggle through a ceasefire and onto the self-determination of Palestine, that we understand the position Palestine holds in the struggle against imperialism in the entire region of West Asia and North Africa, and how we can strengthen our movement through unity and consistency. We're at the beginning of opening an epoch that must take the concept of united front seriously, and I mean very, very seriously. We must develop two concepts, unity in action for Palestine and building a robust anti-imperialist movement. Two objective and subjective reasons. One, despite the excellent and tireless efforts of anti-war organizations and various Palestinian groups, the mass movement of millions worldwide has remained merely mass spontaneous movement. This is where imperialists try to intervene and confuse the movement with their political maneuvering. Two, the scale of the mass movement worldwide is bigger than any organization, either anti-war, Palestinian, or the left in general, to sustain consistency in Palestinian solidarity movement building on the streets, in political direction, and in unified action in the US, Canada, and worldwide. We need coordination, a basic structure, and more consultation together. We can't win with only small-scale organization or move into building an anti-imperialist movement worldwide without building momentum and without connecting really to that powerful mass solidarity movement for Palestine that we're seeing worldwide. In the final analysis of politics and class struggle, to win has to be who has the highest numbers. And we have those numbers. We have humanity on the side, our side, on Palestine's side, and we need to keep organizing those numbers. For 75 years, we've seen Palestinians have tried every avenue to assert their right to self-determination, including legal and diplomatic measures. All so-called solutions imposed by imperialists and Israel on Palestinians since 1948, especially the Oslo Accords in 1993, have not brought peace and were never intended to bring peace or justice to Palestinians. Instead, as planned, they've prolonged and expanded the racist Zionist Israeli occupation and war against Palestine. From October 7, 2003, the defensive military operation of Palestinian resistance fighters from Gaza into Israel effectively ended all deceitful plans of the past, present, and future. The time of false promises and distractions is over. There is no going back to the status quo. The tide has turned, and the necessity of Palestinian self-determination and right to exist as a nation and to form a nation state and to dismantle the colonial state of Israel the way it is today is a struggle today that the world is fighting on the side of the Palestinian people. This struggle for Palestine reaches beyond the liberation of Palestine against Israeli occupation and extends into the fight against the new era of war and occupation, or as the US government claims it, the so-called war on terror, which has gripped West Asia and North Africa for over 23 years since the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan in October to December of 2001. This is why imperialists in the White House, in Ottawa, in London, are risking so much to continue their support for Israel. The struggle for Palestine is also a fight against imperialism, whose warmongering has led by the US with the support of their allies, including Canada, has been causing death and destruction in West Asia, North Africa, and beyond. And as we're spending this weekend discussing and as we campaign about in our home cities, US imperialism and its allies have killed 3 million people with their wars and occupations in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, and Somalia with their new era of war and occupation. Any words of restraint that the Biden administration says to Israel in their genocide is not out of concern for Palestinian lives. It's just that they're concerned that the killing is maybe being too direct, too outright, waking too many people up to the injustices committed by the US government in their support for Israel, and risking their ability to continue launching military interventions and imperialist aggression around the world. Today, as we're calling for a ceasefire, as we're calling for an end to the brutal Zionist Israeli bombardment against the Palestinian people, we are not only directing that demand to the Israeli regime, but also to the United States government and all imperialists. This war is not just conducted by Israel. The US government also bears a responsibility for their funding, arming, and political support of Israel from its creation in 1948 to the current genocide in Gaza. Right now, Biden, Trudeau, Sunak, all of these imperialist heads are maneuvering and desperately trying to justify their genocidal actions through the Israeli Zionist regime, pouring military aid and spinning media lies while the world increasingly sees the truth behind Israel's brutality. And this is not even because the imperialists really care about Israel, and most definitely not because they care about Jewish people, many of whom are on the streets in the movement for Palestine, but because their interest is to keep the colonial project secure, keep markets and resources throughout West Asia and North Africa within their hands. Uh-oh, I got the timesheet there. and to keep their populations, all of us, from rising up at home. So as we struggle for the freedom of Palestine, we're struggling for an end to imperialist hegemony and destruction in all of West Asia and North Africa. US and all imperialists can't afford to lose another war after their big defeat in Ukraine and losing ground with the unfolding new Cold War. Despite the claims that Israel needed to be a safe homeland for Jewish people, we know that there's no safety when a state is imposed by genocidal occupation, and as has been done on Palestinian land. This was actually just a convenient solution for racism in Europe and North Africa, where historically and today Jewish people have faced anti-Semitism, and where Jewish people should have the right to live without discrimination. And in fact, what we should talk about and tell people about is that historically, today, and for Jewish people throughout history, they have been safest in West Asian countries, side by side with their Muslim neighbors. So, as we're told, sorry, I'm wrapping up, I promise. As we're told that the solution is complicated, it's in fact simple. Palestinians' legitimate demand for self-determination must be met. One person, one vote, where Palestinian people of any religion can live together in peace and harmony. It's only Zionist regimes and their imperialist backers that are blocking this only viable solution from becoming a reality. No liberation or freedom is possible for Palestinians as long as Zionism stands, which at its core is colonial and expansionist against Palestine. So I look forward to meeting and connecting with you all this weekend to combine our ideas, our creativity, our collaboration to strengthen the anti-war movement and the Palestine Solidarity Movement. One campaign that we've started in Vancouver is a new postcard campaign to Biden, which is demanding, which I have some examples of, and you can get at the table outside, which is demanding ceasefire now, Israel out of Gaza now, end the siege on Gaza now, reinstate UNRWA funding now, stop arming Israel, and stop funding Israel. So I encourage you to join us for this campaign. Please see our table, and you can sign up to get more information. Just to end, and I'm sorry for going over my time a minute or two, now more than ever, we need unity. We have to come together in a united front for Palestine to build this growing movement for ceasefire and for self-determination of Palestine. Together in this room and around the world, this movement has the potential and capacity to truly change the world for the better. Together for Palestine, for justice, for an end to wars, occupations, and imperialist aggression, we can and will win. And as they say in Cuba, venceremos.
You're listening to Essential Dissent. This episode is Plenary 2, entitled Palestine, Zionism, and Imperialism, from the 2024 UNAC Conference, held April 5th through the 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota. UNAC is the United National Anti-War Coalition.
Good morning, everyone. It is an absolute pleasure and honor to be among the most committed, most resilient, most radical organizers in this country. People who have been committed to this cause of anti-imperialism and anti-war for decades. And I'm also incredibly happy to see that there are so many new faces as well. People who have emerged as powerful players in the anti-war movement over the past 6 months as the global outrage continues in the circumstance or the context of this genocide. But I'm not here to be nostalgic. I'm not here to recollect on a bygone era where people were sitting in a cafe smoking cigars, speaking of armed resistance somewhere in Beirut. I'm here because I'm angry. I'm in a constant state of rage. As James Baldwin put it so eloquently, that to be conscious, to be aware, is to be in a constant state of rage. And for some of us, at least, the events of October 7th definitely shook the state of Israel. That's undoubted. They definitely removed the veneer of impenetrability that Israel had portrayed to the rest of the world. That within a span of several hours, young men, most of whom were orphans, unraveled a security regime that had taken 75 years to build. But it also shook us here. It also showed us how inadequately prepared we were to deal with this situation. And I'm here to help us provoke some questions reflect on our work. That if for decades we've been engaged in anti-imperialist work, and if for decades we've been engaged in anti-war, we have been wholly inadequate in preventing genocide. And I don't say this as a way to demean the work that we've been doing or to lighten the incredible work that's been happening across the globe, but it's to shed a light on the fact that while we engage in this work and use these powerful slogans of anti-imperialism, have we truly engaged in what is necessary in order to retake power and to enact a whole new alternative to this global order that allows for genocide to take place unabated? And again, I apologize, I'm angry. I'm angry because I'm standing here in front of you at the Intercontinental on the river while my family in Gaza is starving to death slowly. I'm standing here in front of you today in a 5-star hotel while more than a dozen members of my family have been killed. Our homes, everything we've built, everything that the Nakba generation built over the past 75 years has been destroyed, forcing us to now once again be displaced. So forgive me. Forgive me for my anger. The United States, on October 8th, had an opportunity to extend the life of its empire for possibly another 100 or 200 years. Had it not responded to the situation as it did. But because of its investment in this genocide, because of its active participation, because of its building of the conditions that created the situation in the first place, the United States has essentially, irreversibly, caused its own unraveling. And this is something that we will only come to understand in the years and decades to come. That this was the moment, more than any other moment, where the tides have shifted. Because not only are people questioning the US's role or Canada's role or the UK's role, people are now questioning the entire neoliberal global order. People are questioning international law. People are questioning the ICC and the ICJ. People are questioning World Bank and IMF in ways that we haven't seen before. But on top of that, we have the normalization of something that's taking place that I could not have imagined on October 6th. And that is the normalization and the coming to understanding of resistance. Because let's be honest with ourselves, Islamic resistance in particular is so unintelligible to a Western audience that even among allies, on the days immediately after October 7th, some people were questioning whether or not this was necessary. Some people were questioning the allegations that were being leveled and made by the State of Israel and using them as justification to issue condemnations left and right. And what I want to hopefully bring today is a question of where do we stand really? Where are we going to put our foot down? Are we going to allow the discourse-shaping narrative of a global media machine, of a Zionist entity, of an American empire to dictate the terms by which we resist our occupiers? And this is something for me that's critically important. Because that narrative shift that's taking place, it's not just about whether or not Palestine should be free. That's a foregone conclusion. If you look at all the polls, especially among the younger generations, Gen Z and millennials, it's not about whether or not they know enough to make a determination that they, you know, they could choose between Palestinians and Israelis. Who do you favor more? You know, these old, you know, these old polls that we used to see on Gallup. You know, who do you favor, Israelis or Palestinians? As if it's like sort of, you know, chocolate ice cream or vanilla. Now the discussion is among Gen Z and millennials in particular, is do you support Hamas? That is something I could have never imagined happening before. Especially in the context of the counterterrorism discourse that we have all been subjected to over the past two decades. And this is a shift that is uncontrollable, that the United States cannot control. And this is a global shift. These are global trends, not just trends here in the United States. So when we look at this situation and we come to understand the genocide for what it is, and as so eloquently described by the two previous panelists, I think to myself, what is our role? Yes, unity is great. Yes, the mass mobilizations have been fundamentally history-altering, where millions of people are taking to the streets every single day for the past 6 months. That's profoundly important in this moment. And it means a lot to the people of Gaza, I'll tell you that. But when do we realize that we have to go beyond? That maybe our tactics that we've been using are not adequate enough. That maybe the moves that we're making need to be reassessed. That the political process that we've been sort of conditioned to believe is the only way that we could make a change or voice our opinions is not sufficient for what we want to achieve. Because we want to achieve a world where this is no longer possible. We want to achieve a world where the military machine cannot exist the way it does today. When we ask ourselves these questions, then we come to the realization that, you know, what we're doing is wholly inadequate. And so what do I propose then as an alternative? And I don't have all the answers. I don't. But what I hope to do is at least start the conversation. And I know that you all have been having these conversations. I know that this is something that's been at the top of the minds of so many of our great thinkers and so many of our panelists here over the past, not just this conference, but over the past several decades. But the global power is shifting. And as global power shifts, conflict increases. And we see what's happening in the world. We know that a war with China is imminent. We know that a war with Russia is imminent. But we also know now that the global South will not be left to the wayside for global powers to decide what's next for them. What the Yemenis are doing today, what the Lebanese are doing today, what the Iraqis are doing today, what the Palestinians have been doing for decades, showing the world that at the end of the day, no matter how many good political analysts you have, or how many incredible historians you have, or how many think tanks you have working on policy issues, at the end of the day, what matters is what happens on the ground. Because nobody in their right mind, no military analyst or strategist could have ever told you that after 180 days, Palestinian resistance is still whooping Israel's butt. CIA will say, we knew this all along. You know, we tried to tell them. Nobody wanted to believe it. That's what it was. They always wanted to believe that the subaltern, the oppressed, the wretched of the earth were content with being under the boot of the white supremacist forces. That no matter what they did, they could never have enough power to challenge the status quo and the forces that be. But Gaza showed us. Gaza showed us that the most surveilled, oppressed, besieged, starved people on this earth can mount a campaign for liberation unlike anything we have ever seen in the history of the Palestinian liberation struggle. But they've been preparing for that. They've been working on that for a long time. 10 years at least, if not more. Question I have for all of us is, what have we been preparing for? Where and when is that rupture for us going to be taking place? And how do we get ready for that? And so I leave you with hopefully a positive message that I think it's possible, that we can learn and be inspired by and take initiative from the heroic people of Gaza and their steadfastness and their samud in the face of the ugliest brutality that I have seen in my lifetime. And I hope that we can work together and make that happen. Thank you so much.
Hello, thank you all for being here. Wonderful speeches. My question is, in terms of taking the next step and changing the tides, how do we talk to Americans about resistance? How do we turn Americans into pro-resistance people?
Well, first of all, I think one of the most important things for me, at least, is to not use the language of extremism or radicalism to characterize resistance. I think it's very normal to think about resistance as a natural result of circumstances. And so when we use that terminology sometimes, and I think it's very troubling to see that even among allies, this language of extremism and radicalism is used. But there's nothing radical about wanting to free yourself from occupation. It's a very normal thing. And it's not like Hamas or any other resistance movement in Palestine is using tactics that haven't been used before. This is all stuff it's a story that's been written for decades and decades before. So, you know, normalizing the way we discuss these things as something that, like the normative way for understanding history and looking at this occupation as what it is, as the abnormal thing, as the aberration itself. Not Palestinian resistance as an aberration or something abnormal, but looking at the occupation and colonization as the aberration, right? As something that should not exist, something that should not be there in the first place. I think that's one of the most important things for me, at least, in sort of creating that discourse shift. And then the other thing I would say to that is, we shouldn't fall prey to the fear that discussing these things might alienate or disenchant people we're talking to about the issue of Palestine. Because we've seen more people in the past 6 months come to the right conclusions because of the fact that an act of resistance such as what happened on October 7th took place. Whereas for the decades that I've been working on Palestine work, as many pamphlets as I've handed out and as many lectures I've given on the Nakba and the history of Palestine, I've never been able to mobilize this many people. So resistance creates solidarity, naturally. And so in order for us to move the needle, what do we need more of? Resistance. And so I hope that that's what we get to, And I think that answers your question. Thank you.
I think Taher covered all of it, but I just want to add a small note, is that we definitely need to work on building the left, a left that is going to support the global South without conditions. I don't want an anti-war movement. I don't want an anti-war movement in the left that's going to put conditions on Venezuela, Cuba, Palestine, right? We need to start here, and then when we expand our reach, our movement, when we grow, we need to learn that when we stand with oppressed people, we stand with them unconditionally. We want them to be free of imperialism. And once those people, that people, the nation is free of imperialism, they have the self-determination to figure out their internal contradictions and their problems. And so we can't be supporting of any people but not supporting their resistance. They have the right to resist by any means necessary that fits the time and the settings and the conditions that they have on the ground. And that goes not just for Palestine, like I just said, for Venezuela, for Cuba, for all oppressed people across the world. And so just to keep that in mind as well, because there was a lot of like, yeah, we support Palestine, but we need to get rid of that.
I don't have much more to say because my two brothers here answered that question, I think, perfectly. But I will say that I think our responsibility and what we've seen over the last 6 months is that as education increases, as people learn more about the history of the Palestinian struggle, about the atrocities that today and throughout the last 75 years Palestinians have faced and endured, the natural progression is for people to start getting familiar with the idea of being in support and defending Palestinians' right to resistance. So I think continuing that education and our discussions is so important. But also, as our friend here said, how do we turn Americans into pro-resistance people? We might have 20 different or more ideas of what pro-resistance means in this room. The fact is we need to continue being pro-Palestine and building a pro-Palestine movement. And the finer details of what pro-resistance means, what exactly, you know, the finer details that people support in the struggle for Palestine, I think will come to be more unified, more together, as this struggle together continues.
Please, the next question.
I want to salute the panelists for your very insightful commentary. But I wanted to raise a couple of questions. One of the challenges we have in terms of transforming resistance in the U.S. is to impart to people that the realities in the U.S. is such where we are part of a resistance process. That one of the insights that people have now come to glean from Gaza is not only the true nature of the Israeli settler colonial project, but people are starting to make the connection between Israel and Palestine and this settler colonial project called the United States of America. So that understanding of a common struggle is part of the tools that we need to utilize in terms of building resistance here in this country. I also wanted to raise a question regarding where we are in terms of this transformation of consciousness that's taking place as a consequence of what happened beginning October the 7th. Colleague commented that when we look at the resistance that some of it doesn't seem to be adequate enough. I want to hear some more about that, because it seems to me that, as you said yourself, what we've seen over the last 6 months has been unprecedented in terms of the millions of people who have come out in support of the anti-colonial struggles in Palestine. Now, what hasn't happened yet, though, is that process playing out to its logical conclusion. The logical conclusion is to go from calls for a ceasefire to calls for Palestinian liberation. Now, that process is, in fact, happening. So I want to make sure that, okay, I'm getting the sheet already. I want to make sure that we aren't premature in suggesting that what is unfolding is not good enough yet. I don't think you're saying that completely. But we have to let this process play out, because we, I think, recognize in this room there's no turning back. You know, for many of us who have been involved in Palestinian support work for decades, as you were saying, it wasn't very many times we would have 15, 20 people in a room talking about Zionism. You know, even among activists, there was a point where maybe 2 out of 10 could give you a working definition of Zionism. But that's not the case today. Today, I got my sisters who, you know, represent, I think, the average person in this country, and they're now talking about anti-Zionism. So we have turned the corner, and that process has to continue.
You've been listening to Essential Dissent. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode was Plenary 2, entitled Palestine, Zionism, and Imperialism, from the 2024 UNEC Conference, held April 5th through the 7th in St. Paul, Minnesota. UNEC is the United National Anti-War Coalition. UNEC fights against wars at home and abroad. Their goal is to bring together organizations and movements representing people in struggle today and unify in collective action against the major perpetrator of war and injustice in the world, the United States government, along with its allies and proxies. You can download this audio for free via radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. Thanks for listening.